This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Pencava in Washington. Neil Conan is on assignment in London. This Sunday, Fox TV airs the 300th episode of The Simpsons. It is the longest-running animated cartoon on TV, and it's a show that many critics view as among the best comedies ever. There have been other animated cartoon families that appeared on TV, the Jetsons and the Flintstones, but from the start, The Simpsons were different. This was apparent from the very first official episode in January 1990, where the family is playing Scrabble and Lisa spells Id.
Id. Triple word score.
Hey, no abbreviation.
Not ID, Dad. Id. It's a word.
As in, this game is stupid.
Hey, shut up, boy.
Yeah, Bart. You're supposed to be developing verbal abilities for your big aptitude test tomorrow.
We could look this id thing up in the dictionary.
We got one?
I think it's under the short leg of the couch.
As simply drawn as the line drawings were for those characters, the writing is sharp and targets more aspects of American life in a half hour than many shows try in several seasons. Everyone comes in for a jab, even us, as in this episode, where Bart gets ready for Halloween.
They become portals to hell, so scary and horrible and gruesome that...
Bart, you should warn people this episode is very frightening. Maybe they'd rather listen to that old War of the Worlds broadcast on NPR,
Yes, Mother.
This hour, we take a look at what has made The Simpsons endure and also at the markets made on TV and on American culture. But has The Simpsons approach been easily replicated? And we want to hear from you. Which episode is your favorite? You can email us here at totn@npr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And joining us on the phone right now from Los Angeles is one of The Simpsons producers, Al Jean. He's been with the show since the first official episode and has a credit on over 200 episodes. Al Jean, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, you were present when the show became a regular primetime show, but that wasn't the very beginning of The Simpsons, was it?
No, they started as short subjects on the Tracy Ullman show that Matt Groening did. And when they were looking for a staff, they showed me a tape of those shorts. I thought they were really funny, and I thought definitely be something I'd like to work on.
Now, it's not a stretch to say that this show really works because of the writing. The animation's fine, the colors are wonderful, but the writing, how has the writing changed over time in your view?
Well, the only real change is that as we've done 300 episodes, we find it harder and harder not to repeat ourselves. So whereas before we could do simple stories like Bart is menaced by a bully or Marge considers having an affair, now we have shorter ideas that may not fill a full episode, but that are different from ones we've done. So I think it's gotten a little faster paced and maybe a little more schizophrenic because of that.
Right, right. How does that work? How do the writers put this show together?
Well, really quickly, a writer or writing team comes in with an idea and pitches it to the staff. If it's a good idea, then we work it out over a couple of days. They write a first draft, which we then rewrite heavily, line by line, for about eight subsequent drafts. The cast reads it. We see what works and what doesn't, and the cast adds their input. We record it, and it's sent to the animation studio. They do a rough cut, which we then rewrite and send to Korea for final animation. And then
to Korea.
If it's back in color, we can rewrite it a little.
Right, so the animation's done in Korea.
South Korea, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But the writing is very, very American in the way it pillories so many parts of American life. Was that the game from the very start?
Well, initially there was a philosophy that we didn't want to satirize people by name or very topical references because the show, was always thought to be timeless. However, as it proceeded and we've done all these episodes, George Bush Senior had a fist fight with Homer, about
right.
8 years ago. So we have, broadened that mandate a little bit.
Uh-huh. Who's the funniest person on the writing staff?
It's a really funny staff, and I'd be hesitant to... to say there, I can name a lot of great people through the years. My former writing partner Mike Reese, George Meyer, John Schwartzwelder, Jay Kogan, Conan O'Brien was with us for about a year and a half. Matt Selman, Ian Maxtone Graham on the current staff are all really funny. Mm-hmm. The writing's good. It's not just one person.
Right, right. 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK is the number. And if you want to give us a call, we're talking with Al Jean, a producer with The Simpsons, head writer there as well. Let's go to Belinda, who's in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi there, Belinda.
Hi there.
Hi, did you have a question for Al Jean?
Not a question, was just calling in to say that my favorite episode was when Bart goes to France as a foreign exchange student. Do you remember that episode?
Well, vaguely.
Yeah, it was in the first season.
Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah, it was a great episode. And I tried to watch The Simpsons as much as I can, but I have to say that one really made me enjoy watching the show very much. Very mm-hmm. funny.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. You know, the thing that strikes me about Simpsons, among other things, is on television, you don't see a lot of people watching television. And that happens a lot on this show.
Well, one reason it does is because on a live-action show, if you did a lot of TV parodies, you have to build a different set for each parody. It would cost a lot of money to physically recreate all those shows. But with animation, it's very easy. And there was a very conscious decision right from the start, both to have them watch TV a lot and go to church a lot, which you don't see a lot of other families on television do.
Yeah, now why do they go to church a lot?
Well, because a lot of families do, and we thought it was a really rich subject. You know, Marge is very religious. Homer goes, but he kind of wanders, and that's a really funny dynamic. Homer often quotes the Bible erroneously, and you know, you're always looking for material that people can relate to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, animation, of course, allows you to do so much more, doesn't it? Because you don't have to worry about actors; you can put really farcical situations on things.
It gives you great latitude in what you can do, and one of the biggest pluses is subtle, which is that the characters don't age, so that when you watch the show, season 14 really looks very similar to season 3. You know, it's something where you don't go, oh, now the show is getting old, Fonzie's the principal, and you know, it's not what I grew up loving.
Right, right. They're not jumping over the shark there.
Yeah, we live in fear of that, but... I think in that website where they vote, whether or not you've gone over the hill, most voters think we haven't.
Mm-hmm. All right, there is that fear of that.
Oh, constantly. You know, I've run it twice, seasons 3 and 4, and now 13, 14 on. And every day that I'm running it, I wake up going, I don't want to be the guy who's there if it really goes downhill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you caution against that? How do you fight that?
Well, you work really hard. You know, you take a long time to come up with these scripts, and you're always being vigilant about, you know, staying within character and you know, not disappointing the people who've grown to love the show. Sometimes you make mistakes, but you try not to let them, you know, become permanent mistakes. You always just remember what it was that people loved about it in the beginning.
Right, right. 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK is our number. And we go now to Gary, who is in Cleveland. Hi, Gary. Hi, Gary. Gary, are you there? I guess Gary is not there. Sorry about that, Gary. Have you ever been sued over anything that's been said on The Simpsons, Al Jean?
Very, very infrequently. You know, we do a lot of celebrity parodies. We have a running character that's based on Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movies. And, you know, we've never been sued. Occasionally, something will happen, like we'll use a phone number that turns out to be that of a real business, and we'll have to change it. You know, we really try to avoid that.
Do you change it when it goes back into syndication?
Yeah, well, you know, these things run forever, so if there's a problem on the first airing, we can always fix it for subsequent use.
So what business did you give the number out for?
Well, I can't remember the name, but it was Dr. Nick Riviera is this really bad surgeon that is on the show, and it was a number of a real surgery clinic. So they were understandably reluctant to have that be the number given out, so we changed it.
Right. I understand there was the possibility of a suit to come last year. I believe it was last year. Brazil was not happy with the way they were depicted. The tourism board in Brazil, in Rio.
Yeah, that was about the biggest controversy in the last several years, and I think it was probably a slow news week, but... what basically happened was we had depicted Brazil as a country where Homer got kidnapped and there were monkeys in the streets. And it was also fun, but there were, you know, a few things that they took offense to, which we subsequently found out were relatively accurate. You know, if we'd gone to trial, I think we would have had a good defense. But a city can't sue for defamation of character, you know. And, you know, next year we're doing a show where they go to London and it's just as, you know, biting. So, you know, I think people have to have a sense of humor about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. What, was there ever anything that's been done on The Simpsons that you thought went over a line? Or that you
cautioned? I think we've been awfully good at being close. Sometimes at the beginning we had language which I think... you know, it was kind of fun to play with, you know, the use of the word hell or damn, and Bart would say it because he had heard it in Sunday school class, and we would have him repeat it. But then I started thinking, you know, it's not really that funny to keep doing. So we pulled back from that. But, you know, I think one reason that we've been on this long is we do have a pretty good idea of where the dividing line is between what works and what doesn't.
What is that dividing line?
It's arbitrary. I mean, you can't, you know, spell it out in a set of rules, but... You know, when we read the script with a group of people, you can kind of tell when something is just not, you know, not good enough. You can tell by their reaction.
Mm-hmm. They're squirming?
They groan. They, you know, they laugh, but then they go, no. Or, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen that often, but there are jokes where we can tell it's too much.
Okay. We go now to Jody, who is in Atlanta. Welcome, Jody.
Hi.
Hi there. Did you have a question for Al Jean?
I did, and... You know, I've been a Simpsons fan really ever since the first episodes, and one thing I was wondering about is what I call, I guess, the transformation of Homer from the early episodes to the way he is now. I mean, initially he was, you know, just this good-natured kind of father that was really a lot like fathers we really had, and now he's almost silly and, you know, goofy, and he's not the same sort of person. I'm wondering, is that a change in writers? Was that a conscious decision? Or
Al Jean?
Well, in a sitcom, there's always a tendency to take someone who's dumb and make them dumber, or take someone who's, you know, sexually promiscuous and make them more so, because you get big jokes out of it. And I think there is a danger with Homer of making him too stupid. I don't know if I'd ever say he was good-natured. He was strangling Bart from the first year, you know, which if you really did that to your son would land you in jail. But
right.
I think it is a good point to try to smarten him up so that people can relate to him more. You know, I think in the last couple of years he may be a little... less crazy, although, you know, it's always, again, like a hard thing to gauge where to draw the line.
It seems to me, as a watcher of Simpsons, that the focus of the show has moved from Bart and more to Homer.
Yeah, although that was never a conscious decision.
Did you just run out of material for the 10-year-old?
Well, the first season, it just so happened that about three of the first seven were Bart episodes, which, you know, when the show debuted, you know, hit really big. And I think Bart is an incredible character. It's just a little harder to write for him because, you know, a grown man has a job and a lot more happening with him than a 10-year-old boy. Also, Bart is really cool, and I think most of the writers are nerds. So it was a little harder to think of Bart stories. Not that they aren't good when we do them, it's just that they're a little harder to do.
So they could relate more to Homer?
Yeah, I would say. I think Homer, you know, I know there are a lot of things that have come from my life that Homer has done, and the other writers the same way.
Like,
you know, there's once that I had a submarine sandwich in my refrigerator that I kept eating until it got a little bit green, and Homer did the same thing.
All right. Let's go to Brian, who's in White Salmon, Washington. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi there. A question for Al Jean.
Yeah. I would like to know if your staff watched a lot of TV as kids growing up and still managed to become the amazing creative geniuses that they are.
Oh, that's definitely the case. You know, I grew up watching cartoons like Bullwinkle or shows like Get Smart. You know, this is definitely a show that was written by the TV generation. And, you know, that's one reason Homer on the show and the family watch TV so much every day.
And is that more, Bullwinkle is more the cartoon background for this show than those other families that we'd seen in cartoons like the Jetsons and the Flintstones over time? It seems to have more of that, the Rocky and Bullwinkle mindset.
Yeah, I think that the writing on Rocky and Bullwinkle was the sharpest. You know, with the Flintstones, at the time, people didn't think you could do a cartoon on a primetime show because to do 30 minutes of animation a week was thought to be impossible, and they did a lot of... creative things like reduce the number of backgrounds, reuse things to make it, you know, arable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now, you know, people wouldn't be satisfied with the slower pace of that show.
Well, Al Jean, can you stick around for another minute or two for us?
Okay,
we have to take a quick break. We're talking about The Simpsons and taking your calls, 1-800-989-8255, email address totn@npr.org. I'm Melinda Penkava. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington. And today we're talking about The Simpsons celebrating its 300th episode. And we're also talking about its impact on culture. Our guests this hour are Al Jean, who is executive producer of the show. And joining us now is Matt McAllister, who teaches communications at Virginia Tech. Welcome to Talk of the Nation, Matt McAllister.
Thank you.
Well, Matt, when The Simpsons first came on the scene like 13, 14 years ago as a 30-minute special, what was the reaction there?
I think that it took the country by storm. I mean, it was a big hit. Of course, there had been some advance notice on the Tracy Ullman show with the shorts. But, you know, as a Christmas special, very irreverent, you know, in this primetime animation form, which hadn't been seen for a while, it really, I think, drew attention and captured the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the late 1980s, Fox, the network that The Simpsons are on, Fox was just this fledgling network, and The Simpsons is one of the first shows to sign on. So The Simpsons get the credit for a lot of Fox's success? Do they help them get through that stage?
Yeah, I think so, actually. You know, Fox was looking for legitimacy. If you read a lot of the trade journal accounts of Fox in the late 80s from, like, Variety and other places like that, there were real questions about Fox's viability. I mean, no other organization had managed to be a fourth network since the 50s with the DuMont network. And so to start and television network nationally and then have it succeed was a real dare. And The Simpsons, the success of that show, its visibility and the ratings and the audience it attracted, the type of audience, really, I think, led to some credibility on the part of that network.
Mm-hmm. Now, Al Jean, I've read in several places, that this was the right place and the right time for a show like this, that if Fox hadn't been there at that stage where it was looking for something, was taking risks, that Simpsons may not have developed as it did.
Well, there were a lot of factors. I think the fact that it had a gestation period of 4 years in the Tracy Ullman show really helped. The characters could get refined. Mm-hmm. It wasn't done in a conventional testing process where you shot a pilot and then, you know, saw what a test audience thought. And when they did it as a series, Jim Brooks and Matt Groening were able to get a 13-episode commitment to work out the animation and make sure that it was done properly. And if any of those things hadn't been the case, I don't think it would have worked.
And the network had more of a hands-off approach to the content there?
Well, Jim has always had a deal with Fox where the notes come from Jim, you know, which he's earned on the basis of all of his success in TV and film. And
in other words,
that's how we do it.
The notes of what the show should be come from him.
Yeah, so how you know, what direction we should take and, you know, how we should fix scripts, et cetera.
Okay. We're going to go to Dan, who's in Victorville, California. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you doing?
Just a couple comments and a quick question for your guests. The comments are, I remember watching Liv Ullman and thinking that The Simpsons would make a great series. Also, my favorite character by far is the ever-eclectic Lisa. And now the question, is the character of Mr. Burns actually modeled after Rupert Murdoch?
Owner of Fox. Al Jean?
Some people say Rupert Murdoch, and then they say Smithers is modeled on every other executive. it's also, there have been things about Burns that have been modeled on Barry Diller, and, you know, honestly, on any boss that any of us has ever had. I think he also is a little bit like the evil banker character in the It's a Wonderful Life film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, if I could throw in one thing, just to piggyback on what Al Jean said, you know, The Simpsons, from what I could tell, you know, was a unique combination of an insider championing the show, James L. Brooks, you know, kind of knowing how to maneuver the networks and having a lot of credibility on his own, and an outsider, an underground cartoonist that brought a different sensibility to television and what a TV show should be. And sometimes you see with a medium that real creativity, or at least innovation, comes from outside the medium. And I think with The Simpsons, there might be at least a little bit of that going on there.
Oh, definitely. And with Matt, you know, he had come from not exactly underground comics, but he had done strips for alternative news weeklies. And
right. It
definitely was not a conventional, you know, show, just as Seinfeld wasn't, you know, or Saturday Night Live wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have an email here from Sam Rutherford, who writes, "My favorite episode is the one in which aliens kidnapped Clinton and Dole, then impersonated them during the 1996 election. Even when Homer uncovered the fraud, the American electorate dutifully voted for the two-party choices offered them and were subsequently enslaved by the aliens." it seems like you don't hold any prisoners for either party on The Simpsons, Al Jean.
No, and I think that actually is a plus. You know, we are of a liberal bent, I would say, but, you know, we do a lot of jokes about the Kennedys and did them about Clinton. So if I had to say the overriding philosophy of the show, I would say it's probably nihilism, where I tend to think that government and big business are really out to screw the little guy, and that, you know, it's more important, you know, to see what the feelings and emotions of a family are.
Right, but, you know, I was thinking about that idea because the Seinfeld was on in the same era, in the 90s, and that was a show about nothing, and some would say nihilistic there, too. It seems like The Simpsons, there seems to be some kind of moral center to it.
Well,
or am I just totally misreading
high moral
this?
Standard where, you know, when Homer steals Cable, suddenly his life falls apart, or we had him
bad karma
suing the church, and then he got struck by lightning, you know, the other week, and it's almost like we exaggerated for a comic effect that you know, consequences in the show are much stronger than they would be in real life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that leads to the long-term success of the show, that it does walk a tightrope of being very irreverent, very critical, and very pointed in its criticism of different institutions and practices. But ultimately, it does have a nice heart to it, that it does have usually a nice affirming message. It's a very life-affirming show in a lot of ways. And, you know, it does celebrate, or at least it is fairly positive about some fairly traditional institutions, like ultimately the family, or ultimately religion, or at least spirituality. And I think that's one thing, that mix of those two elements is very unique, and it makes the show, I think, have an enduring quality.
Mm-hmm. But you took heat from it from the start, Al Jean, didn't you? There were people who did not, they were not amused by this.
Yeah, no, at my daughter's school, you can't wear a Bart Simpson T-shirt.
But, really?
They, on the other hand, when they have school fundraisers, they ask me for autographed scripts. So I think that kind of sums up the dynamic.
That sounds like something that could end up in an episode, you know?
It just might. you know, it's also happened, whereas we were maybe a little more counterculture at the beginning, we've certainly, with the years we've been on and the fans we've accumulated, become part of the culture. I believe it's the case that in England there's a religious cult that dresses like Ned Flanders. So, you know, it's amazing how it establishment it's become. Our you know, goal is to fight against that and just not lose the edge that got us here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What would one dress up as Ned Flanders? What would be the distinguishing garment?
A sweater and a tie, so you know, tie. Maybe a mustache. I don't know. I read this and I found it difficult to believe, but apparently it's true.
All right. Let us go now to Gabe, who is in Connecticut. Hi there, Gabe.
Hi. I've got my favorite Simpsons episode, which would probably be the one where Springfield legalizes gambling. And I have a question. What is, Al Jean, what is your favorite episode or season?
You know, I can't be objective. There are different episodes that are my favorites. I liked working on the one where Mr. Burns had baseball stars who were real professional players because I got to meet them. Recently, I liked the episode where we parodied Behind the Music, and we saw sort of the Simpsons, you know, origin, and then they, you know, sort of broke apart and were into drugs, and then they came back together for a reunion special. I thought that was a great show business satire. We have so many different kinds of episodes that, you know, if I had to list my favorites, it would be easily over a dozen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, we want to play something here. We have a clip from a show, and this features Lisa, who is seems to be this conscience on the show, the most intellectual, socially conscious member of the Cole clan. She defends the environment, animal rights. She's even supported striking workers. And in this clip, we hear not only the family's response to her activism, but you get to take a jab at the network, too.
Ordinarily, I'd say you should stand up for what you believe in, but you've been doing that an awful lot lately.
Yeah, you made us march in that gay rights parade.
And we can't watch Fox, because they own those chemical weapon plants in Syria.
Do you get any heat from management with those jabs, Al Jean?
I have to say no. You know, they've had an incredibly good sense of humor about it all the way through. Rupert Murdoch played himself on an episode where he had evil robots working for him. So, you know, the only notes we get are with regard to say, you know, content that might, you know, be a bad influence on children. You know, for example, we wouldn't do something where Bart would stick a fork into a light socket. Or, you know, they do tend to worry about things like, we had a show where Homer was addicted to medicinal marijuana, and then when it became illegal again, he had to quit. That they were concerned about. But in terms of satire of Fox, no, never had a problem.
But it sounds like Itchy or Scratchy might put the fork into the wall socket.
Well, you know, that's a special case because it's imitatable behavior, you know. In other words, if a kid watches the show and then says, you know, hell or something, then that's one thing. But you really wouldn't want to hurt a child. I mean, obviously, that would be bad.
Right, right. Well, Al Jean, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Al Jean is executive producer and head writer of The Simpsons and joined us by phone from Los Angeles. Matt McAllister remains with us. He's professor at the Department of Communication Studies at Virginia Tech, and he specializes in pop culture and commercial media. Matt McAllister, why do you think the show has lasted now? They're going into the 14th season, as I understand it. It's been 13, 14 years it's on the air.
Well, I think a lot of the reasons were touched on by Al Jean. The fact that it is animation, you don't see the stars age. It can have a timeless quality. I think the emphasis on quality writing in the show helps it out tremendously. I mean, they've really, you know, they bring in just an excellent stable of writers. Every so often, they bring in new blood. I think that the mix of the show of referring to relatively cutting edge references and being seen as hip by, you know, a lot of the population, especially young people, but with that kind of solid heart to the show where, you know, most of the episodes you feel good. It has a happy ending. And when you look at some other animation shows, you know, like South Park or Beavis and Butthead, you know, that mix is really hard to achieve, that they usually go one way or the other, and The Simpsons just manages to redirect itself toward that center of the critical, the cynical, with the affirming.
Okay. And I want to bring up Sandra here, who is in O'Fallon, Illinois. I believe, yes. Sandra, you disagree.
No, I can't stand the show.
Okay.
I find that it glorifies obnoxious and rude behavior in both children and adults. And Homer Simpson is about the worst role model a child could have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find it funny in the least. It's vulgar to me. Haven't watched it in 14 years.
Uh-huh.
First time it came on, I looked at it, and it was like, you've got to be kidding.
Mm-hmm. So when people are saying that they like the show and they find values in some moral center, you're just not buying it.
I'm flabbergasted by it. It's like, where?
Uh-huh. Matt McAllister?
Well, I mean, definitely I can understand that reading, and I can understand that you can look at the specific behaviors of the character, and also what sometimes the humor is based on, because the humor is sometimes based on rude behavior, and I can understand that. My mom has that exact same reading, I mean, that exact same interpretation. She can't stand the show either. But I guess, you know, to me, sometimes, you know, when I first watched it, what drew me, I guess, was the humor and kind of the little bit of the crassness or the little bit of the edge. But as I watched it, what kept me with the show was I did see that kind of message. There's an article by Paul Cantor at the University of Virginia, where he argues that you know, some of the humor is biting and some of the situations are biting, but often the show itself, it has a moral ending or a moral message that's kind of nice, and you don't see that often on TV.
Okay. Well, Sandra, thanks for your call. Did you have another comment, Sandra?
I can't get past the vulgarness of the humor. I can't enjoy something and get to that moral ending if I have to put up with that kind of humor throughout it.
Now, have you watched it at all in recent years?
No. It lost me the first time it came on.
The animation got a little better in that time. But Sandra, thanks for your call.
Thanks for taking it.
Okay, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And as we've been discussing, The Simpsons have taken on all topics in American culture, but it may be argued that religion is discussed the most, or at least the most on any program on TV that's on in prime time. Simpsons live next door to the evangelical Ned Flanders. He's the character of God who has shown up in multiple episodes and on Sunday nights on the Springfield talk radio station, which airs Gabbin About God.
With us tonight, once again, our very own three wise men, Reverend Timothy Lovejoy, Monsignor Kenneth Daly, and Rabbi Hyman Krestovsky.
Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Okay, and our first caller is from Shelbyville Heights.
Yes, hi. With all the suffering and injustice in the world, do you ever wonder if God really exists?
No. Not for a second.
Not at all.
Great, good conversation there.
And on the line with us now from the offices of the Orlando Sentinel is religion reporter Mark Pinsky. He is also the author of The Gospel According to the Simpsons, the spiritual life of the world's most animated family. Welcome, Mark Pinsky.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, well, what role does religion play in the Simpsons world?
Well, it plays a central role. They say grace at meals. They go to church on Sundays. They read and refer to the Bible. They pray, usually when they're in big trouble, and they pray out loud, and God answers their prayers. And if you look at the data from pollsters from George Gallup to George Barna, in those practices, they reflect the spiritual lives of Americans more accurately than any other show on television.
Mm-hmm. You know, while the writers seem to crack jokes about every major faith, are they sacrilegious?
Well, I think they dance right up to the edge. It's funny, of the denominations that they've taken whacks at, the pressure group for the Catholic Church, on behalf of the Catholic Church, actually, has complained. But there have only been, I think, three jokes about Catholics in the 14 years. But the denomination that comes in for the hits the most is, of all groups, the Unitarians. And I guess it's because they think they can take a joke better than anybody else.
Like, what's the joke they've made about the Unitarians?
Well, Homer gets bumbles into a role as a missionary in a South Pacific island, and one of the little girls says, "Is there one true faith?" And Homer says, "If it's the Unitarians, I'll eat my hat."
Now, in another episode, Homer meets face-to-face with God and describes him as having, quote, perfect teeth, nice smell, a class act all the way. Is that how God is consistently portrayed on The Simpsons, or does he come in many shapes and sizes?
Well, Homer's often confused about the nature of God, but the God, or our God, as we like to say, who appeared in that episode, Homer the Heretic, appeared last week in an episode called Pray Anything. And the writers are very sensitive. They show God's body, but in deference to people's faith, they never show God's countenance, his face, however. Mm-hmm. He is wearing Birkenstocks, and although most cartoon characters since Disney, including those in The Simpsons, have four fingers, when God is portrayed, God has five fingers. And I maintain it's a sly joke that The Simpsons aren't real, but God is real.
Right, but they're not made in his image then, if they just have the four fingers, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just counting here. What's your favorite religious segment on The Simpsons as a religion writer?
I have two. One is Homer the Heretic that you referred to, mm-hmm. where God comes to Homer in a dream, like it happened in the Old Testament, and has a very fundamental dialogue about the nature of faith. He asks, what if we pick the wrong church? We're just making God madder and madder every Sunday. And he asks questions like, why does God need us to worship him? And you have to sort of shake yourself when you hear this. This isn't Bill Moyers on PBS. This is a cartoon show.
Right. Right. And we will get right back to you, Mark Pinsky and Matt McAllister. We have to take a short break right now. But when we come back, we'll talk with both Mark and Matt and take more of your calls. 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK if you wanted to talk about The Simpsons. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Melinda Pencava. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today on Talk of the Nation, we're talking about The Simpsons, one of the longest-running animated comedies in television history. The 300th episode will be airing this Sunday on Fox. And our guests this hour are Matt McAllister, a communications professor from Virginia Tech, and Mark Pinsky, author of The Gospel, According to The Simpsons. And I'd like to go to calls right now. We have Harry, who's with us from Ann Arbor. Hi, Harry.
Hello.
Did you have a question for our guests or a comment?
Well, comments. I started off actually reading one of the newspapers that had Binky, so I go way back with The Simpsons.
Right, with Matt Groening, yeah.
Right, but I haven't watched it religiously, but sometimes my kids bring up something. I say, well, Homer said this, or this is the way they did it on The Simpsons. My wife tends to get annoyed when I do that. But one of my favorite ones is religious ones is where Bart was kneeling in his bed praying, and this Homer and Marge come up, and they see him praying, and he goes, "And dear God, please kill that bully Joey at school." And Mom goes, "Bart, you can't have God, kill somebody." Bart. Homer goes, "Yeah, you got to do your dirty work yourself." So, Yeah, it's a great show, and I haven't watched it over the years. It seems like Sunday evening's not the best time for me, but I tend to watch our reruns, and I never get enough of them.
And there are a lot of those. Mark Pinsky, any comments on that?
Yes, actually, that tracks a very important issue. In the world of theology, there's a concept called toxic prayer, which is what if you pray for the wrong thing, or what if you pray for a bad thing? And here's a debate, again, in a cartoon, in a comedy, raising a very serious theological issue. And it's true, Homer and Marge are right. You can't pray for evil things, at least from a theological construct that Judeo-Christians believe in.
Right, right. Let us go now to Sarah, who is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi. I was calling in response to a comment about the woman that made earlier about not liking The Simpsons, and I'd just like to say that I've been watching The Simpsons almost since it first aired, and my mother hated the show. She wouldn't let me and my sisters watch it, and it irritated us, but she began to watch it over the years, and the more she watched it, the more she liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And she really enjoyed it for the political satire and all the social issues that it brings up, and we all watch it religiously now. We tape episodes, and we have tapes of back-to-back Simpsons and things like that.
Right. Does your mom drop any Simpsons lingo into everyday conversation?
Yes, she does, and you know, we always, when we do something silly or stupid, we always say, you know, "Don't," that Homer says. So my family's always a big fan of it. And I'm a big fan of Lisa Simpson. I relate to her a lot. I'm a vegetarian. I consider myself an activist. And I always like the things that Lisa, you know, a 10-year-old or 8-year-old brings up, you know, that a lot of adults don't have, you know, the guts to address. And so I like the show a lot.
Right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Okay. I have an email here. This is from Cecilia in Portland, Oregon. One of my favorite episodes was when Homer called his local PBS station and pledged to pay a huge amount of money to stop their fundraising programming. Can anybody relate? Then the pledge enforcement van arrives to get Homer to pay up. I've often wondered if Homer had a good idea or if the PBS station had a better one.
Well, it is true, you know, that really nothing's sacred on a show. And I show some clips in my class when we talk about how TV can critique culture, and I always end the series of clips where they make fun of communication as a major, which, of course, is the department I teach in, and that just gets the class totally rolling. And so it really does seem like they cover so many different elements of society with such biting criticism. It's a very eclectic show that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Mark Pinsky?
Yes, I think what you mentioned, that the earlier woman's reaction of seeing the first show or the first season and being turned off the show, that was a very common occurrence I found in my research. Christians in particular may have tuned in once or twice and were just repelled by it and walked away. And it's a pity, because in the years that followed, the show became not so much about Bart, as mentioned earlier, but about Homer. The plots became very subtle. I think there are moral messages in almost every single episode, and it's a shame that people who would really have appreciated it were in fact turned off and have not come back.
Do they find religion, or do they just get more nuanced in the writing about it, or?
Well, when I talked to the writers in researching my book, they said it was an act of creative desperation, and I think Al Jean referred to this earlier, and that is that sitcoms that go on and on, you know, season after season, they run out of ideas because so many of these ideas have been used in previous sitcoms. But because for a number of complex reasons, religion had been a taboo for most of television's history. So it was when they first did Homer and Lisa versus the Eighth Commandment, one of the writers apparently said, well, this is great. Let's go back and look at the other commandments, see if they have anything any better.
Right, right.
I would also like to second the caller's fondness for Lisa. You know, as I've watched the show, I've found that my favorite episodes are the ones with Lisa. I watched the other day the one with Lisa's substitute, where Dustin Hoffman was the voice of the substitute teacher she really had a connection with. And I just thought that had some really significant emotional moments, which I know is awfully odd to say about a cartoon, but it's true.
Right. Well, it does seem they're crudely sketched for animation. It's not great detail there, but it seems like there's more of a backstory for these characters. There is more depth to them, and that must speak to the writing.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I argue that in many ways Lisa really speaks for Jesus, or in some cases an Old Testament prophet. As one of the callers mentioned earlier, she'll speak truths that adults won't speak. Although sometimes she does go too far, and the writers told me once that they felt there was a period when her still small voice threatened to become a shrill small voice, and she had to back off a little bit.
Yeah, but that's also the parody of it too, isn't it? That people can, they'll be so tied to their causes that they will just push it too far. And that's part of what they're writing about.
And that's why it's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Right.
We have another email here. This is from John, who writes, I judge all humor and other Simpsons episodes on a sliding 1 to 10 scale, with the itchy and scratchy movie being a 10. And John writes, the best Simpsons lines ever. Marge, you never listen to me. I'm sorry, I can't do the voice very well. You never listen to me. You only hear what you want to hear. Homer, thanks. I'd love an omelet. America in the 90s, is that right? Or is that just old time? It's like you had that kind of thing going on in other sitcoms, but they just take it several steps beyond, no?
And I think, I think that television is, at its heart, a comedy medium. I mean, it stresses comedic writing. And with The Simpsons, they can do a lot of throwaway gags, you know, using the animation to shift scenes and such, and put absurd imagery in there. And they can, as you said, use the backstory of the character to do a lot of the humor for them. That they have a tremendous humor shorthand based on what we know, the viewers know, about Homer, Lisa, Bart, etc.
Okay. Let us go take one last call here. We have Hannah, who's in Hallandale Beach, Florida. Hi there, Hannah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Did you have a question?
Well, I had a comment and a question. First of all, I'm a single adult woman, and I consider myself of a higher intelligence, and for me, pretty much almost everything on television is intolerable. And I just wanted to commend the writers, because pretty much all I watch is C-SPAN and The Simpsons when I choose to turn my TV on.
Okay.
Because it's palatable and it's just so bitingly intelligent and really, I think, mocks everyone equally.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that is so curious to me is the fact that the writers managed to slip in so much adult humor and so much intelligent comedy, but at the same time, it seems to be this sort of fun-loving, almost a married with children, family comedy. And I wanted to know, do the writers do that on purpose, that the bi-level writing, or is that just something that comes from the dynamic between them?
Matt McAllister?
Oh, I definitely think that is purposeful. I mean, they see The Simpsons as fitting into a particular a mode of humor, and they play to that. They know that that's one of the key things about the show's success. And so, yeah, I definitely think that's not accidental.
All right. Well, Hannah, thank you for your call. And thanks to Matt McAllister and Mark Pinsky. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt McAllister is professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Virginia Tech, and Mark Pinsky is author of The Gospel According to The Simpsons. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.